So good morning, everyone. Can you hear okay? Is it clear, loud and clear? Okay, so welcome all of you to this workshop on the topic of death and dying. And I think it takes a certain amount of courage to come to an event like this. You know, a lot of people want to avoid this subject altogether. I don't want to hear about it or think about it or talk about it. So I admire your courage in coming here. So before we begin, as we normally do in at least in our tradition of Buddhism, we start with generating a positive state of mind, positive motivation for being here and participating in this workshop. So let's take a few minutes to do that. Make yourselves comfortable. Take a few deep breaths, breathing in slowly, deeply, and then exhaling slowly, letting the air go out slowly. This helps to relieve any tension there may be in our body or in our mind. So do that for a couple of breaths, like three breaths. Then just go back to your normal rate of breathing. And if you notice in your mind any thoughts related to other times, the past or the future, try to put those aside. You can always pick them up again later, but try to just let your mind be in the present, the here and now, right here in this place and right now, in the present moment with what we're doing here. And then, as for the motivation, it's recommended that we have an altruistic motivation for the things we do in our life, especially when it comes to spiritual activities such as meditation, learning spiritual teachings, and so on. So the best possible motivation that we could have is wishing to become enlightened, fully enlightened, like the Buddha, so that we can help everyone else, all other living beings, to be free of suffering and its causes, to achieve happiness and its causes, and eventually, ultimately, help them reach enlightenment as well. This is what we call bodhicitta, the mind of enlightenment. And if you're familiar with that and comfortable with that, you can bring that into your mind and think that is your reason for being here and participating in this workshop. But if you're not so familiar with or comfortable with that idea, you could have some other kind of altruistic motivation, such as just wanting to be as helpful to others and the world as you can in your life, wanting to use your life in ways that are meaningful and helpful, beneficial, and not harmful to anyone. So you could think, I'm here to learn how I can make my life more beneficial and meaningful, not just for myself, but for others and for the world. That's just a suggestion, but you could, you know, use your own thoughts, your own words to generate some kind of altruistic intention. Okay, we'll do some more meditation later on. But first, I'll talk for a little while. And can you hear me okay? There's this road work going on out there. So I don't know if the people in the back, you're able to hear. Okay. Okay, so so today and tomorrow we're going to look at this topic of death and dying. And when I was living here back in the 90s, that's when I started teaching this kind of course, and I taught it a few times, and we made this little booklet based on what I taught. I think these are available now. There's English, also Chinese, you can get downstairs on level one. Yeah, so what I'm going to do this weekend is based on this book, but there'll be some additional material as well. And so part of the time I will be talking, and I have a slideshow to go along with what I'm talking about. And we'll also do some meditation, some reflection on some of the points that I'm talking about. Then there'll also be time for questions. So if you do have questions, just try to keep them in mind or write them down. And later, at the end of the morning or the end of the day, we can have some time for you to ask your questions. Okay, so different religious and philosophical traditions in the world have different ideas regarding death, what it is, what happens before death, what happens after death, and so on. So we don't have time to explore all of these, and anyway, I'm not a scholar, so I couldn't tell you all about these. I have spent most of my life learning and practicing and teaching Buddhism. So that's what I'm familiar with, and that's what I'm going to be talking about during this weekend. But just to remind you, the Buddha, when he was teaching, always advised his followers, his listeners, to not just blindly believe what he said, but instead to think about it, investigate, check for themselves if it's true or not. So Buddhism is very much non-dogmatic. It's not a system where you're told, this is the truth, this is how it is, you must believe it, and like that. So whatever I say here today and tomorrow during this course, please use your intelligence, your discriminating wisdom, investigate for yourself to see if you think it is true or not. So just to give you an overview of what we're going to cover today and tomorrow. So we're going to look at Buddhist perspectives on death and dying. And then impermanence, which is like a fact of life in Buddhism, but also in science. And then meditating on death. So there are different ways that we can meditate on death. We'll look at some of these and try them out. And then how to prepare for death, how we ourselves can be better prepared for death when it happens. Then finally, how to help others who are dying. So I'll try to cover all of this. It's a lot, but we'll try. And also, just in case you didn't hear, originally we were going to go until 4 o'clock tomorrow, but we're cutting it short, so it will be just 10 to 12, and the afternoon is free because we have some other events happening later in the afternoon and the evening. So first we'll start with some Buddhist perspectives on death. So these are things that Buddhism has to say about death. And again, you don't have to believe these or accept these. You can just, you know, think about them yourself and decide if you agree or not. But it's also good to keep an open mind. So if one of these things doesn't agree with you, it doesn't fit your idea of things, try not to just immediately reject it and say, oh, that's rubbish, that's not true. Try to at least think, maybe it's true. And be willing to explore it, investigate it. Okay, so one thing is that Buddhism says death is a natural, inevitable part of life. So that's pretty obvious. I don't think anybody could deny that. However, some people have this idea that death is like a failure. Yeah. If somebody is diagnosed with a terminal illness, they can sometimes feel, what did I do wrong? Yeah, I am bad, I'm a sinner, I must have made a mistake, I must have done something wrong, or I'm a loser. Have you ever come across that idea? I've even heard of some teachers, I don't know, spiritual teachers or New Age teachers who kind of, you know, impart that idea. So according to Buddhism, that's not true. We all have to die, and it's got nothing to do with whether we're good or bad. And you can see that. There's lots of good people who have lived in this world. For example, Mother Teresa, you know, who dedicated her whole life to taking care of others in a completely selfless way. She died. Buddha died. Jesus died. Okay, so these great, wonderful, kind, compassionate, wise beings died. Okay, so how can anyone say that, you know, if you die, you're a loser, you're a failure? That's not true. So according to Buddhism, it's just a natural part of life. It's a natural part of the process. Every day the sun rises and sets. And, you know, babies are born, they grow up, and eventually they die. Leaves die and fall off the trees. So all of these things, you know, come into existence, live for a while, and then pass away. It's nothing abnormal about it. So it is important to understand this and accept this, because otherwise, if we think death is something abnormal, a sign of being a failure or a loser, that will just make additional suffering, as we are approaching the end of our life. I mean, it's already difficult enough to be going towards death, but if we have this additional thought, oh, I'm bad, I'm a loser, I'm a failure, what did I do wrong? That's just adding more suffering, and totally wrong, unnecessary, needless. I once met a man who told me a very sad story. His wife had been a member of some kind of Buddhist group, not really a mainstream group, but I think a fringe group. And she was diagnosed with cancer. And at first, members of the group would come and visit her and encourage her to pray, and they would pray together. They had some prayer that they would do. So they would all pray together. And I think they hoped that her cancer would disappear and she'd be okay. But that didn't happen. She, you know, cancer was still there and it got worse, and eventually, you know, she was getting closer to death. And when it looked like the cancer wasn't going away, the members of the group stopped coming. And they even told her, oh, you're not praying hard enough. So they kind of abandoned her, and the message that they gave to her was, if you were practicing properly, if you were praying enough, then you wouldn't die. You know, you'd get cured and you'd be okay again. So she was kind of left alone at the end of her life. I mean, her husband was still there, but her spiritual friends, members of this group that she was part of, kind of abandoned her and even, you know, made her feel as if she was doing something wrong. She wasn't practicing properly. So that's just an illustration of how people can sometimes have this idea and how painful it can be, how harmful it can be. So I just want to make sure that's not the Buddhist view, because that's what this man, he said, is this normal in Buddhism, you know, to talk like that and behave like that? And they said, no way. You know, the Buddha himself said we need to accept and acknowledge that death is a part of life, and we're all going to die, everybody dies, and prepare for it. Okay. And so to elaborate on that further, the Buddhist view is that it is important to accept the reality of death and be aware of it while we're alive. Not wait till the last minute, you know, and then start thinking about death, but all along in our life to be aware that we're going to die. We're all going to die. Everyone's going to die. So the Buddha, I'll give some quotations later from the Buddha, what he said about it, but he definitely encouraged his followers to contemplate death, be aware of death, understand that it is a reality, and be prepared for it. So the reason, this is the main reason why it is important to accept and acknowledge the reality of death, so that we're prepared for it when it happens. There are definitely things we can do to prepare ourselves for death so that when it does happen, we'll be in a positive state of mind. We won't be, you know, freaked out with fear and confusion and not know what to do. Okay? So I'll talk more about that later. That's a big part of this the workshop, is how to prepare for death. What are some things we can do to prepare for it? But we first have to accept it and acknowledge it and not avoid it, which is what a lot of people do. A lot of people, I don't want to hear about that. I don't want to think about that. Don't talk to me about death and dying. They just try to avoid it, deny it, ignore it, as if they're going to live forever, as if death's never going to happen to them. And that's... you know, that's just not realistic, and it's also not helpful. Okay. another point, death is not necessarily a bad experience. It all depends on how we prepare ourselves. So probably most people in the world are afraid of death, right? It's not something we look forward to, like a holiday, like a picnic. But why do we feel that way? Why are we so afraid of death? It's probably because we think it will be a bad experience, a difficult experience, something horrible. But that's not necessarily true. There are stories of people who are quite calm and peaceful and even positive as they're getting close to death and going through the experience of dying. I can say that from my own experience, because I was with my mother before she died for the last couple of weeks, and it was amazing. She was so calm and peaceful. No fear, no unhappiness, no attachment to anyone or anything. So she was just completely cool about it and ready to go. So I saw that with my own eyes, with my own experience, and I've heard lots of other stories as well. So it isn't necessarily a horrible experience. It depends on our mind. It depends on, you know, how well we have prepared ourselves before we die. So if we prepare ourselves it won't be a bad experience. And in fact, in Buddhism, it said it can even be an opportunity to deepen our spiritual practice and create virtue and get closer to enlightenment. And so it can be transformed into something really positive, really useful. But that depends on us making preparations beforehand. And then another point is death is not a final end, but a gateway into another life. So this is a controversial topic, and we don't have time to go into it. But there's a lot of people in the world who think that when somebody dies, they just stop existing, like a candle flame going out, and that's it. There's nothing left, nothing that continues. So this, many scientists or people who hold a materialist scientific view, this is what they think, they believe. And but I think if you look at religions, all religions and spiritual traditions teach that there's some kind of continuation, something, whether you call it a soul or an atman. In Buddhism, we say it's the mind. There's something that continues to exist after death. It's not a total wipeout of everything. But nowadays, even within Buddhism, some Buddhists who are questioning this, and like I say, we don't have time to go into all of that, but there's a new book, it's just published a few months ago, called Rebirth in Early Buddhism and Current Research. I'll show you the cover in the next slide, written by a German monk who's also a scholar. His name is Bhikkhu Anilayo. He's written quite a few books, and his work is really extraordinary. He does a lot of research and very, very careful analysis of things. So anyone who is interested in this topic, you can. There's that book. There's lots of other books as well on this topic. But from the Buddhist point of view, this is one reason why it's so important to prepare ourselves for death. If it was just a total annihilation, going out of existence, then there's not so much need to worry, right? It's like you just go to sleep and you don't wake up again. But that's not the case, according to Buddhism. Something continues, and what happens next, like in their next life or next rebirth, depends to a large extent on how we live our life, what we do with our life. So it's like with the way we live our life, we are creating the causes for what happens to us after death. So that's why it's really, really important to think about that, consider it carefully, and then live our life accordingly, which I'll go into more later. And one last point is that we can become free from death and rebirth. So Buddha was once like us. He was an ordinary human being, a mortal, and had difficulties and problems just like we do. But he found a way to be free of suffering, the causes of suffering, and reach a state of complete peace and liberation. We can call it nirvana or enlightenment. And then he taught how we can do that as well. We can also reach that state. This is the kind of the ultimate or long-term goal of Buddhism. It takes quite a bit of time and energy to reach that, but the point is, it isn't the case that, we will be forever in this situation of having to die and be reborn, die and reborn again and again and again ad infinitum. We can reach a state where we're free of death and rebirth, no longer having to experience those difficulties. But again, this is something for you to investigate and see if you can believe it or not. So this is the cover of that book that I mentioned. I bought a copy of it. I got an e-book, but I haven't had time to read most of it, just a few pages. But I'll be on the airplane in a couple of days for many hours, so I can read it then. But anyway, if you are interested. Oh, and by the way, I can make these slides available, so we can put them on the ABC website later, so you don't need to write everything down now. Okay, so as I mentioned, the Buddha talked a lot about impermanence and death and encouraged his followers to to be aware of these facts of life. They are facts of life. They're not just philosophical ideas or speculations, but it's the truth, it's the reality, which is supported by science. I mean, a lot of cases of impermanence we can see with our eyes, but others you need special instruments like microscopes, electron microscopes and so on. But everything, especially physical phenomena, every physical phenomena, our bodies and buildings and the earth itself and everything on the earth, all of these things are changing all the time. So this is one quote from the Buddha about impermanence. What is born will die. So people are usually very happy over the birth of a child, right? When a baby's born, everyone is just, wow, excited and happy and so on. But a baby being born, a child coming into the world, means a being who will eventually die. So people would say, oh, don't talk about that, don't think about that, that's depressing. But it's true, it's reality. And sometimes the baby doesn't live very long, doesn't even have a chance to grow up. Sometimes it dies right away or within a couple of, you know, days or weeks or months. So if people were more aware of and accepting of death, they would probably be less shocked and upset and, you know, emotionally in turmoil when death does happen. If we lived our life with more of an awareness of death, then it eases the pain, the suffering when death does happen. And then he goes on to say, what has been gathered will be dispersed. So, for example, we have a group of people here. I don't know how many there are, 100 or so. And so we come together, and we're together for a couple of hours, but then we disperse. Everybody goes home, back to their own places of living. So this is always the case. When there's a gathering, then there's eventually a dispersal, whether it's a workshop or a rock concert or a movie or a meal at a restaurant. You know, there's gathering and then there's dispersing, coming together and then going apart again. What has been accumulated will be exhausted. So we build up wealth, for example. People usually spend a lot of time accumulating wealth and possessions. and they may be able to hang on to their wealth and their possessions for a certain amount of time, but it's sooner or later, eventually, especially when that person dies or if they go bankrupt before they die, then that wealth, the possessions, and so on will be dispersed, will be either used up or go elsewhere. So we cannot hang on to those things forever. What has been built up will collapse. You can think about buildings. This happens a lot in Singapore, right? There's a building at one point in time, and then the government decides, no, we don't like that building anymore. Let's take it down and put up another one, right? So things that have been built up will either be torn down or will collapse due to earthquakes or due to terrorist attacks like the Twin Towers in New York and so on. So things that have been built will not be there forever. Eventually they will pass away. And then what has been high will be brought low. What comes to mind there is people. Sometimes in their life they reach a very high position, but nobody can be in that high position forever. You know, presidents, kings, queens, prime ministers, generals, and so forth. So they may reach, or celebrities, you know, the number one movie star, the number one singer, the number one football player. So they reach a high level, a high position, but they can't be there forever. Eventually, somebody else comes along to replace them. They get sick, old, die, or out of favor, or, you know, commit some crime and end up in jail. So there's lots of stories like that. Of, I was just thinking about Saddam Hussein. You know, at one point in time, he was incredibly powerful and wealthy, and he had such a comfortable life, apparently, you know, wonderful places to live, palaces and so on. And then he made some mistakes, he did some bad things, and he ended up in jail, and then hung, right? He was hung. That was how he ended his life. So, yeah. So, things don't remain in the same way forever. There's always changes that take place. And when we talk about impermanence, there's actually two kinds, two levels of impermanence. There's gross and subtle. Gross impermanence are the changes that are obvious. We can see, for example, somebody dying. At one point they're alive, and then later they're not alive anymore, or a building being torn down. So that's gross impermanence, because it's obvious, it's easy to see. And then subtle impermanence refers to the changes that are taking place every minute, every second. Okay, so like our bodies are not the same from one moment to the next. Like constantly there's changes taking place. We can't see these with our eyes, they're not obvious, but they're happening, and then gradually over time, because of these momentary changes, our body gets older and weaker and eventually comes to an end. So because there are changes taking place every moment, then eventually we have the gross changes, such as death or destruction and so on. So these things may seem obvious, but the Buddha said it is important for us to contemplate them and not ignore or deny them. And then another quotation from the Buddha. This existence of ours is as transient as autumn clouds. So that's a nice analogy. Although in Singapore, you don't really have autumn, do you? But anyway, you do have a lot of clouds. Clouds that come and go in the sky. So clouds are things that are very transient. They're there at one point in time, but then they move through the sky and then they disappear, even within a couple of minutes or a couple of hours. So they're very transient. To watch the birth and death of beings is like looking at the movements of a dance. So that reminds me of a line in one of Shakespeare's plays. He says, "All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances." I don't know if you've heard that one before, but it's quite well known. So it's very similar, that human beings and other beings come into existence, go out of existence. So it's similar to a play or a movie or a dance, a performance, you know, constantly changing, coming and going, appearing and disappearing. A lifetime is like a flash of lightning in the sky, rushing by like a torrent down a steep mountain. So you may object to that and think, wait a minute, a flash of lightning only lasts, you know, 1 second. A lifetime can last 80, 90, 100 years. So, But then if you look at the total amount of time of our planet, if you go to these museums, like natural history museums, and they show a timeline of our planet, how long our planet's been here, and then within that, how long human beings have been on the planet, it's just very, very, very tiny. And then within that, how long does one human life last? You know, one human life, 100 years, more or less. Again, it's just a fraction of time within the totality of just the existence of our planet. So thinking in that way, yeah, a lifetime is very fast. And people say that sometimes. They get into their 50s and 60s and 70s and they think, where did all this time go? Wow, you know? It seems like, you know, just yesterday my kids were born and now they're already having their own kids. Have you ever had that experience? Where time just seems to go so quickly. How about if we just pause for a few minutes and spend some time contemplating this before I go on to the next point? So make yourselves comfortable. Try to sit with your back straight, but let your shoulders relax. So be comfortable, be relaxed. Let your breath flow in and out in a natural way, a natural rhythm. And just let your awareness settle on your breath and on your body, sitting either on your chair or on your cushion. Just being aware of the gentle rhythm of the breath coming in and going out. So a good place to start becoming more aware of impermanence is with our own body. We may have the feeling that our body's the same, more or less, from one day to the next, one year to the next. But that's not really true. Our body is changing every single minute, every single second, every single nanosecond, fraction of a second. So this isn't something we can see with our eyes or be aware of, you know, with our normal awareness, but we can understand it, intellectually at least. Because we know our body's made up of parts. It's not just one whole solid thing. It's made of skin, blood, bones, organs, tissues, muscles. And those parts are in turn made of smaller parts, such as cells. And even the cells are made of smaller parts, such as molecules, atoms, subatomic particles. So scientists are able to break matter down into more and more minute particles. And whatever they find is clearly transitory, transient, not fixed, solid, frozen, but moving and changing. So the smallest particles that make up our body are moving and changing all the time. They don't stay the same, one moment to the next. therefore, the larger parts of our body that are made up of these tiny particles, they too are changing moment by moment. So that means our body doesn't stay the same from one moment to the next, but it's changing constantly. And just try to get a sense of that. Try to have awareness of that. And just as this is true with our own body, it's true with all other bodies. So all the other human bodies and animal bodies existing on this planet, of which there are billions or trillions. So all of those bodies are changing every moment. It's also true of all the inanimate things. The planet itself, what it's made up of, rock and earth and water, trees, plants, grass. So these are also made of tiny particles that don't stay the same from one moment to the next, but are constantly changing. And it's also true for all the human-made things, like buildings, houses, cars, roads, the clothes that we wear, the food that we eat. So all physical things, material things, are changing every moment. It's true also for our minds. Our minds are like streams made up of mental events, thoughts, emotions, memories, dreams. So each moment there are new thoughts or experiences arising in our mind, lasting a moment, then disappearing, and the next one arises and disappears, and so on. So our minds are also impermanent, changing every moment. Now just check your mind, how your mind feels, reacts to this idea of impermanence. Are you able to accept it? Or do you have resistance to it? Do you find it something you don't like, you might be afraid of or averse to? And if you do feel some resistance, some uneasiness or aversion to the idea of impermanence, that's something that can change too. That too is impermanent. When we first start thinking about meditating on impermanence, we might not like it. We might wish it wasn't true. But with more thought, more contemplation, more familiarity, that can change. We can become more accepting of it, comfortable with it, and even welcome it. So in my own experience, this idea of impermanence is actually really helpful for dealing with certain types of problems. For example, when there's some emotional problem coming up, you know, like unhappiness or depression or anxiety or anger or whatever, something unpleasant in the mind, I find it really helpful to remind myself that it's impermanent. Yeah, it's not going to last forever. So that's the good side of impermanence. Problems, whether they're, you know, emotional, mental problems, or also, you know, physical problems, feeling unwell, feeling sick or whatever, feeling tired. You just remind yourself, okay, it's here now, but it's not going to last forever. It's impermanent. Whew, that's good news, isn't it? So that's the positive side of impermanence. It's not a negative thing. It all depends on how we look at it. Also, another really positive side of impermanence is that, you know, if things were not impermanent, if they were permanent, that means we'd have to be the way we are forever. We couldn't change, we couldn't improve ourselves, we couldn't reach nirvana or enlightenment, right? I mean, Buddhism says we do have the ability to do that. We can be free of our suffering and the causes of suffering, our disturbing states of mind. So that's because of impermanence, because these negative states of mind and suffering are impermanent rather than permanent. So that's good news, right? If they weren't impermanent, then we'd be stuck forever with our suffering and our anger and our confusion and our unhappiness. Yeah. So I find it helpful to remind myself of the positive aspects of impermanence. Okay. Any questions so far? Anything I've said that you'd like to ask about? I see a hand back there. Where is the microphone? Is there a microphone?
Hello. The question I would like to ask is the Buddha himself impermanent? Like, will there be a day where the Buddha is no longer exists?
Okay, so is the Buddha himself impermanent? Well, again, the meaning of impermanent is changing, like constantly changing. Okay, so Buddha, I mean, being Buddha mainly means having a mind that is enlightened, that's free of all the negative things like anger, greed, ignorance, and so forth. So it's like a totally purified and transformed state of mind. So that's the kind of mind the Buddha has. But because it's mind, and mind by nature is impermanent, meaning it's changing every moment. That's just the nature of mind. It's always changing. So even the Buddha's mind is impermanent, changing every moment, but that doesn't mean it will ever change into something other than enlightened mind. It will always be enlightened mind, always be completely pure and perfect and enlightened. Okay. So it's changing, but it will never change into something bad or something negative. So that's what we say about Buddha's mind. And in general, in Buddhism, we say the mind, including our minds, are such that they will never go out of existence. They will never stop existing. This is hard to believe or hard to accept, but anyway, that's how it's explained. Our minds always did exist. They didn't start at some point. They didn't come into existence, and they won't go out of existence. So they are, in a way, eternal, always there, always will be there. They will never go out of existence. So that's true for our minds. It's true for Buddha's mind, that they will never go out of existence. But even though our minds are eternal, always existing, always will exist, they are still impermanent in the sense that they're changing all the time. So in Buddhism, the terms impermanent and permanent have a somewhat different meaning than they often have in the normal world. Sometimes we say, if something exists forever, that means it's permanent, but not necessarily. Something can be impermanent but still exist forever. Does that make sense? Yeah, so anyway, to answer your question, yeah, Buddha is impermanent, but he will exist forever. So we have to kind of get a different understanding of the meaning of permanent and impermanent. Any other questions? Okay, there'll be a chance later if you think of anything. So then the Buddha encouraged us to contemplate impermanence, meditate on impermanence, just be aware that things are changing all the time. And through practicing meditation, if you develop your mind in meditation and become, you know, more and more aware, in touch with things, you can actually experience it directly. Okay, so we, at this point in time, we can't see the atoms and tiny particles moving and changing, but it said that you can develop that ability through the practice of meditation. You can actually look at an object which looks very solid, and you can see the atom. I don't have that experience, but I've heard that it is possible. You can actually see the molecules and atoms moving and changing. So when you have that experience, then it must be very, very powerful, because you can really see with your own eyes directly how things are changing. And one of the benefits of getting more insight or more experience of impermanence is it really helps to decrease attachment, because you can really see how things don't last. When we have attachment, grasping, desire, craving, that kind of attitude, the feeling we have is we want that object that we're attached to remain, always be there, never change, never go out of existence. Does that sound familiar? Have you ever noticed that? I want that person or that object to always be there just the way they are right now, never change, never go away. But that's actually not realistic. It's going against reality. It's going against the truth of impermanence. That object, person, or beautiful car or whatever, by nature is changing every moment. It's not going to always be there. It's not always going to look the way it does now. It's going to change and get older and eventually not be there anymore. So understanding impermanence helps us to lessen our attachment, let go of this grasping and attachment and craving, which the Buddha said is one of the main causes of suffering. You know, craving leads to suffering, because what we crave, what we are attached to, you know, isn't going to be there forever. And so when it does change or disappear or go out of existence, we'll be very disappointed. We'll really suffer. Okay, so you can still enjoy things. I heard this story. I'll pass it on to you in case you haven't heard it. You may have heard of this famous Thai master, Achan Cha. He's passed away now, but he was very, very well known, very respected. And I heard that one time a disciple asked him, "If I accept the truth of impermanence, how can I enjoy life?" So his idea was that if we really saw things as impermanent, we wouldn't be able to enjoy life anymore. Right? So Achan Cha replied by saying, he pointed to a glass. I guess he had a nice glass full of water on the table beside him. And he said, "I see this glass as already broken, but I can still use it and enjoy it right now." So I found that really profound. You know, you can accept that an object, whether it's a glass or anything, isn't going to be there forever, is one day going to be broken or go out of existence, not there anymore, but you can still use it and enjoy it while it's there, while it's still there. And in fact, when I think about that, I think if you really did accept the impermanence of things, you'd probably enjoy things even more, because you know they're not going to last forever. So you really cherish them, especially people. You know, if you really have this awareness, that person's not going to be there forever. You know, the years and months and days I have to be with that person are limited. And I think you would really cherish them much more. Really be very caring and loving and kind. And so I think it would actually enhance your relationship and your love for that person. I mean, I could see that myself. For example, when I was with my mother and she was dying, we knew, you know, it was only a matter of time before she was gone. That was the best time of my life, you know, the time when I just valued her. You know, I didn't know how many more days I had to be with her. So I was just like, "Oh, she's so precious." The amount of love I felt, the amount of appreciation I felt for my mother was so amazing. Yeah, so you may have had that experience too, you know, that you really value someone when you realize they're not going to be there forever, they're not going to be there much longer. So I think really having an awareness of impermanence, the fragility of life, you know, enhances your experiences rather than makes you, you know, depressed and morbid and so on. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it doesn't take away or destroy our happiness, our pleasure. And it just helps us to see that things are very precious, but they're not going to be there forever. So we use them and enjoy them with a lot of respect and appreciation. But then when they do go out of existence, they're not there anymore, of course we'll still be sad. But because we've already thought about that and prepared for that, we will be totally destroyed. Okay. Would you like a few minutes break before I go on? 5 minutes? I mean, if you want to, of course, you can stay here, but anyone who does need to go out and get a drink or use the restroom, just 5 minutes, though. I'm going to ring the bell to call you back. No. Maybe it's just the air conditioning made my nose run. Okay. Don't worry. Thank you. Sure. Thanks so much. Okay. Are you well?
I'm fine. I also wanted to ask you earlier, did the day when you talked at the Heart Sutra, are the slides available?
I did send them to the office, and they were going to put them on the website, but I don't know how you access that. Maybe
okay, no, I will check with them.
Cecilia in the case, yeah, or Jan, one of the office people.
Okay.
That's great. This guy I knew, and he said in his 20s he got cancer, and he said it was the best thing that happened to him in his life. It helped him make up his relationship with his family.
Uh-huh.
They weren't getting on well before, and they managed to clear that up.
Oh, that's nice.
And then he got interested in meditation, and he became a monk, and now he's really, really happy studying and practicing. So, yeah, our life can go in a really good direction. Something
and
like that.
And if it doesn't, like what we're preparing for, if it didn't, it's still not bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I'm really sad. It really makes me sad that people have that idea.
Thank
you. I'm glad you.
Yeah,
glad
and
you.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I love everything you're saying. It's true. It's actually like
otherwise everything would be like frozen and stuck and that would be horrible.
And it's true that you will appreciate something more when you know it's not forever. You're just there with it.
Yeah.
And that no reason to attach to really anything. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A question. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between delusions and afflictions?
Between what?
Delusion.
There's no difference. It's
no
just
difference.
A different term.
It's the same meaning?
Yeah. Some people, I like to use the word delusion. Some people like to use the word affliction. But they're just two different translations of the same term, like klesha in Pali.
How about attachment and desire?
Well, sometimes those two terms are also used interchangeably.
So there's no difference?
Well, it's a little bit tricky. Sometimes they can be used differently.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I understand. Well, I've got some from. Okay, thanks.
was just thinking, because just now we were contemplating the impermanence, so what goes up must come down, what rises will fall. So when one person attains enlightenment, does the wisdom go away from that?
When someone...
Is enlightenment permanent?
Well, I was he asked that question before. Did you hear what I said to him?
Yes.
Yeah. So enlightenment will last forever, but it's still impermanent.
Why is that not subjected to the impermanence as we know it?
It is impermanent in the sense that it's changing all the time. But once someone reaches enlightenment, they reach that state, they will not fall back. So it's not the case, you know, that quotation, what goes up comes down. But with regard to enlightenment or with regard to nirvana, that's not the case. You've gone beyond. I think what the Buddha was talking about in that verse was ordinary existence, unenlightened existence, samsara. So within samsara, we go up and down. But once we are out of samsara, free of samsara, we don't go up and down anymore. So, as mentioned before, the Buddha said that it's important to be aware of death and meditate on death so that it will have a positive effect on our life. We will live our life more wisely, ethically, and be prepared for death when it does come. So there are different ways of meditating on death, and I thought to go through this one method that's found in the Lamrim, the stages of the path to enlightenment in the Tibetan tradition. And it's actually not in this book called Preparing for Death and Helping the Dying, but it is in this other book, How to Meditate. So we'll go through the meditation today and do a little bit of meditation on it. But then if you want to continue doing it on your own, you can find the instructions in that book. So this meditation we're going to go through is called the 9-point meditation on death, because it has 9 different points. And these 9 points are in groups of 3. So there's 3 groups of 3. And the first three points are related to the definite nature of death, the fact that death is definite or certain, it's definitely going to happen. So I'll just talk a little bit about the first 3 points, and then we'll do some meditation on them. This may seem obvious, you know, everybody has to die, we all have to die. However, if we look at our mind, our attitude, our thoughts, and the way we live our life, probably most of the time we don't think about this. You know, we don't think about death. We don't have the sense, I am going to die. So it's almost as if we feel as if we're going to live forever. We're going to be here forever. Yeah. So in order to counteract that, because that's dangerous, you know, if we have the sense, I'm going to be here forever, I'm going to live forever, we may not do things that are important to do before we die. And we also may do things that are not very wise and skillful, which could mess things up when we die and also in our next life. So it is important to get a sense that, you know, we're not going to be here forever. We're going to die at some point in time. So So with this first point, everyone has to die, we can think about all the people who have already lived on this planet. I don't know how many there are. Probably nobody can count them because long ago they didn't, you know, have censuses and count how many people there were. But probably billions, you know, billions of people have already been born and lived and died on this planet, you know, even before we came along. And it's helpful to think about even people who were sort of great in a way, like great leaders, rulers, kings, queens, presidents, and so on, people you read about in the history books, and great artists, musicians, the people you may feel admiration for, you may like their music or their writings, and so on. Great scientists, people who had amazing brains, amazing minds, and like Einstein, you know, able to just come up with all these explanations of things that nobody ever thought of before. People who were physically, you know, very strong, able to do amazing things with their bodies, you know, athletes, for example, or weightlifters. So all these people who did kind of fantastic things or great things in their life, but even they weren't able to beat death. Even they had to die. So so the point is, you know, to think, well, you know, we can't find the example of anybody who was born and lived in this world, even people who did a great, amazing things, but they had to die. They weren't able to cheat death or beat death. They had to die too. Therefore, it will also happen to me. Okay? So this is one way of contemplating it. And it's also helpful to think about our own experiences, people we ourselves have known in our life, you know, from the time we were born up until now, people we've known who have already died, you know, grandparents, for example, teachers, friends, siblings. So we've all known people who were once an important part of our life but are not there anymore. They're absent. And then just remind ourselves, just like they had to die, one day it will be my turn. I will have to die too. So these are just some of the ways in which we can contemplate that. But the point is to really bring it home to me. You know, I'm no exception. It's not the case that everybody else has to die except me. I'm going to live forever. So it's just something that happens to everyone, every human being. And then the second point is our lifespan is always decreasing. Time is constantly moving. We can't stop time. Okay? So even as we're sitting here, I mean, already since we started, 1 hour and 20 minutes has gone by. Okay? And time keeps passing. You know, every second, every minute. And then, you know, minutes turn into hours, and hours turn into days, and into weeks, months, years, and so on. So time is constantly passing, and as time is passing, our life is getting shorter. We are getting closer to death. So it's a bit like, you know, we are on a vehicle, like a train or an airplane that's moving, going in a direction, taking us to a certain destination, and the destination is our death, the end of our life. So it's like we're constantly going in that direction, constantly moving in that direction. So contemplating this is to get a sense that, again, impermanence, things are changing all the time, and as they are changing, we are getting older and we are getting closer to the end of our life. So it's like we're on a journey moving ever closer to the end of our life. And number three is that we have a limited amount of time for spiritual practice. So this meditation, because it's part of the Lam Rim, the stages of the path to enlightenment, which is designed for somebody who wishes to follow the spiritual path and eventually reach enlightenment. So that means the intended audience of this meditation is somebody who does want to do spiritual practice and eventually reach enlightenment. So that means you have a sense of value of spiritual practice. You know, that's an important thing to do in my life. So we need to contemplate that if we do want to do spiritual practice, we have a limited amount of time to do it. So that's important, because sometimes we procrastinate. You know, we think, yeah, I really want to meditate. I really want to do a retreat, for example. Some people may say, I really want to do a certain retreat. Okay? But this year is too busy. I have too many things to do. I have this and that and da-da-da-da-da. So I'll do it next year. And then next year the same thing happens. And then the next year the same thing happens. So we tend to procrastinate. You know, we put things off. And we do that because, you know, we think we have a lot of time. There will be a next year. There will be a next year, and so on and so forth. So that's the danger of, you know, not realizing that, you know, we're definitely going to die. We don't know when that's going to happen. That's the next point, actually, when death is going to happen. So if there is something that we consider important and we want to make sure we do it before we die, then it's better not to procrastinate, but to at least start doing practice now. Start doing spiritual practice. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. And, what do you call this thing? Hourglass? hourglass. This is a good analogy for our lifespan, because it's like the grains of sand in the hourglass represent the amount of time that we have in our life. Okay, so when the glass is turned and the grains start running down from the top to the bottom, that's like, you know, our time is running out. So eventually, you know, all the grains are going to be gone, and that means no more time left. So the point of this is not to become scared, frantic, you know, about death, but just to realize, you know, that, oh, we don't have all the time in the world. So if there are things that I want to do that are important, and hopefully that includes spiritual practice, that I make sure I do them before death happens, before my time runs out. So it said that after contemplating these three points, ideally the conclusion we come to is that we feel a determination to use our life wisely and mindfully, not waste our time. Okay, so I'll talk about the next three points, and then we'll do some meditation before we break for lunch. Okay, so the next three points come under the the main point of the time of death is uncertain. So even though we may come to accept that we're going to die, we're mortal, not immortal, we're going to die, but we may still have a sense that it's a long way off. You know, it's not going to happen anytime soon. It's almost like death is way off in the distant, you know, way, 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 way off there. So we don't need to worry about it so much right now. So So that isn't definite, okay, because the time of our death is indefinite. So one reason for this, the first reason, is our lifespan is uncertain. So what this means is that it isn't the case that all human beings have the same amount of time to live. Even though we say life expectancy, right, which is just an average. What is it now in Singapore? What is the life expectancy for? It's usually different for men and women. Women live longer than men. Interesting. Huh? 84 for women and men? 2 years less. Anyway, but that doesn't mean you're guaranteed to have that many number of years, right? I mean, that's obvious because you have young people dying, you have babies dying. Okay. So this point means our lifespan is uncertain. It's not that we are guaranteed to have a certain number of years and then we die. That would make things kind of easy, wouldn't it? Like if we all knew that we had 84 years, okay, then you could really plan your life, you know, and make sure you get everything done before you die. But it's not like that, right? I mean, there are people who live to be 84, and there are people who live to be 90 and 95 and 100 and even more than 100. There are people who live to be 110, 115, really amazing. But that's rare. Okay, but there's also lots of people who die much earlier than that. So anyway, that's the point. We just don't know how long we have to live. And there's nobody who can tell us. There's nobody who can tell you. There's no sort of government body, you know, that you can Google and find out, okay, I am so-and-so, this is my IC number, this is my date of birth, and then it's going to come up, this is the day you're going to die. Nobody knows. Nobody can tell. Even though, I guess, there are fortune tellers, right, or palm readers, and they may be able to. But, you know, do they really know what they're talking about? Maybe not. So this is one thing we have to live with, this uncertainty about when we're going to die, what age will we reach before we die. Okay, so age has nothing to do with it, how old you are. Some people may think, but I'm only 25 or 35, so, you know, I don't need to worry about death. Well, that's not true, right? There are people who die in their 20s and 30s and 40s and so on. So age has nothing to do with it. And also health has nothing to do with it. Another thing people think is, well, I don't have cancer or some other terminal illness. I'm really healthy. But, you know, somebody who's healthy might die before somebody who has cancer. And the reason for that is, the next point, there are many causes of death, many different ways that death happens. So sickness is one. Heart disease, cancer, there's many different kinds of illnesses that can lead to death. But there are other things that can happen as well, like accidents, car accidents, motorbike accidents, bicycle accidents, even just falling down. Even just slipping and falling down, you know, could be a cause of death. And, so there's many different ways that death can happen. And also they say in the teachings that there's this irony that even things that normally are meant to prolong our life, help us stay alive and live longer, can be a cause of death. For example, food. Some people die due to eating food. Sometimes the food can be poisonous or these different kinds of bacteria, you know, can be in the food, and then after eating that food you can get sick and die. And there's also cases of people who choke to death. You know, they're eating something and it gets stuck in their throat and then they choke and die before they're able to get help. I heard about this guy who was eating potato chips. Potato chips, and he choked on a potato chip. So, yeah. And also medicine. I mean, medicine is supposed to support our life, prolong our life, but that can become a cause of death. Sometimes if you take the wrong dose or the wrong medicine, your body has a reaction to that medicine. Or sometimes people go into hospital to be treated for one kind of illness, and while they're there, they pick up something else, right? That happens quite a lot. So that's, you know, tragic, tragic and sad, but it's part of our world, part of our existence, that even things that are supposed to help us can become causes of death. And then the third point is our human body is very fragile. So we may feel as if we're strong and healthy, but it doesn't take that much to cause that strength to disappear and become weak and helpless. For example, if you think about illnesses, sometimes they are caused by tiny microscopic cells or viruses, you know, so tiny you can't even see them with your naked eye. You have to look under a microscope. But that tiny, tiny little thing, if it gets into your body and starts to multiply, that can lead to death, sometimes in a very short time, right? And also falling, you know. I think it's kind of strange in a way, insects, you know, sometimes spiders or ants, they might fall from a long, you know, very high distance, but they still manage to get up and walk away. But a human being, if they fell from that, you know, the relative distance, would probably die. So our human body is actually not that strong or invincible as it may seem to be. You know, it's actually quite fragile. Our body and our life is fragile. Yeah. So again, the point is not to induce fear, although fear may come up, but the real point of this kind of meditation is just to get a sense that, you know, we're going to die and we don't know when it's going to happen. So if there are things that we consider important that we really want to make sure we do, such as spiritual practice or whatever else it is you want to do before you die, just make sure you don't postpone it. Make sure you at least start. Find the time to start working on that now. Well, maybe I'll just do the last point, because the last three points, just so you can see how it all works, how it all fits together. So the third root main point is what helps at the time of death. Okay. So once we get to this point in the meditation, we probably feel a little bit concerned about, you know, dying and what is that going to be like and what will be helpful for me at the time of death. So here the three points are first to look at loved ones. This is what we usually turn to when we face difficulties in our life. We turn to a family, to friends, hoping that they will be able to help us. And they do. We do. Maybe not always, but much of the time, we do get help from our loved ones. They give us support and comfort and physical help, emotional help, and so on. So can they help us at the time of death? So they probably can to a certain extent in terms of taking care of our body, giving us food, taking us to the doctor's appointments and so on. So they will be able to give a certain amount of help. However, according to Buddhism, as we are dying, our mind gradually kind of collapses into itself. I don't know a better word for that. But our senses, seeing, hearing, and so forth, start to degenerate. You know, we can no longer see, we can no longer hear. And our mind goes from a more coarse level with our five senses to a more subtle level where we're no longer in touch with the outside world. Okay? So as we are dying, our ability to communicate with other people, to hear other people, and so on, to interact with other people, declines, decreases, and we find ourselves just very much alone within ourselves, within our own mind. And so our loved ones can't do much to help us at that point. Yeah, we're really on our own. Okay, so they can only help us up to a certain point of the dying process, but not beyond that point. Then we're on our own. Another thing about loved ones too, it's not definite that they will be there when we die. We might be far away from home. We might be in an airplane. Yeah, and our phone doesn't work or something like that. So, yeah, that's also not definite, that we will be surrounded by loved ones when we die. So instead of thinking, well, they will help me, they will take care of me, it's better to look at how I can take care of myself. What can I do to take care of myself, to help myself at that time? And then wealth and possessions. So this is another thing we depend on a lot during our life. You know, our home and our comfortable bed and furniture and appliances and, of course, phone and all these devices that we have. So, you know, we get a certain amount of pleasure and happiness from our things and our money while we're alive. But at the time of death, how much can they help us? Especially given the last, you know, stages of life when we are bedridden and unable to, you know, use our things. And then, you know, as we go into the actual process of dying, we leave all of those things behind. You cannot take anything with us. You can't take your phone with you. You can't take your money with you. You can't take your clothes, your house, your car, all these things we spend so much time accumulating in our life and taking care of during our life, but none of those things go with us to the next life. They're all left behind. So they're limited, what they can do for us at the time of death and afterwards. And our body. What about our body? So that's something that's been with us our entire life, every day, 24 hours a day. Our body is always there. And we do depend on our body for pleasure, enjoyment, doing all kinds of fun things and interesting things. But then when we come to the end of our life, our body will get weaker and weaker, and eventually we won't be able to move anymore. So our body will not be able to do much for us at that time. So according to Buddhism, death, what death is actually the point of separation between the mind and the body. It's the time when our mind separates from our body. All during our life, our mind and body are together, interacting, working together. But at a certain point, the mind will separate from the body, and that's death. When the mind leaves the body, then the body doesn't function anymore, doesn't breathe anymore, no more life. The mind goes on to be born again, take another life. So our body can help us while we're alive, but not while we're dying. And it might even become, it might even be a problem. There may be physical pain and discomfort and inability to move and do things, and we're dependent on others, even to go to the bathroom, even to bathe ourselves, feed ourselves, and so on. Okay, so our body is limited in that sense. It can't really help us. And eventually it will be This is the destination of our body. Or when people are cremated, they're still in a coffin, is that right? Yeah, so whether you're buried or you're cremated, is you still use a coffin. So the conclusion, ideally, that we come to is that what will help us at the time of death is Dharma. Dharma meaning spiritual practice. It doesn't have to be Buddhism. Okay, there's lots of other spiritual traditions that have wonderful practices for working on the mind, developing the positive qualities of the mind, creating virtue, and so on. I'll talk more about that later. What are the spiritual practices we can do to prepare for death that will help us at the time of death and also afterwards? But ideally, this is the conclusion we come to by meditating on these points. So let's do a meditation now on some of these 9 points. Okay, so this kind of meditation is what we call analytical meditation. I know some of you have done it before, you're familiar with it, but for those of you who are not, it might be your first time. So analytical meditation means we use thought. We think about certain points to understand them better and to bring our mind to a certain state. For example, like, you know, just realizing that we're going to die, or realizing how important it is to use our life wisely, and so on. So it's thinking about certain points to reach a certain conclusion. So I will introduce the points and give you some time to think about them or contemplate them. Then just do the best you can to stay focused, concentrated on these points. Think about them and try to avoid letting your mind wander away to other things, like what you're going to eat for lunch, for example. So try to stay focused on the meditation itself and bring your mind back if it does wander away. So let's first think about the main point of death being definite, death being certain. So death is something that happens to everyone. Everyone has to die, not only me. So think about some famous people from the past, people you heard about or read about in the history books, or people that you may feel a lot of admiration for, great rulers or great artists, or great generals, people who did great things. And even though they did these great things during their life, they still weren't able to avoid dying. They got old and died, or they died in some accident or battle or whatever. So just try to get a sense of how even those great people were not able to avoid death or find a way to cheat death. They had to die too. And in addition to the great or famous people, there were lots of just ordinary people, farmers, merchants, housewives, secretaries, clerks, who have lived in this world, on this planet, since human existence began. There's probably been millions or trillions of such people. So they all had to die. And right now in the world, there are more than 7 billion people. But all of these people will one day die. And that includes me. Death is something that will happen to me, as well as everyone else. So really try to get a sense that there will come a time in the future when I won't be here anymore. The world will still be here and other people will be here, but not me. And then contemplate how time is constantly passing. We can't stop time. And as time is passing, I'm getting closer to that point when I won't be here anymore, when I will leave this life, this world. It's almost like being on a journey, being on a train, moving in that direction. And it doesn't stop, it doesn't slow down, we can't get off this train. So we just keep moving continuously closer to the end of our life. And when that time comes is uncertain. We don't know how long we have to live. So one reason for that is because human beings are not guaranteed a certain number of years of their life. We don't have a fixed lifespan. And in reality, people die at all different ages or stages of life. Some even die when they're infants or small children. So maybe you know of a family that lost a young child, or you've heard of such cases. So bring those to mind as examples of this. there are other cases of children dying when they're still toddlers, even before they start going to school. School children die. Some people die in their 20s. See if you can think of any examples, people you know or have heard of. Others die in their 30s. And so on. So some people live quite long, don't die until they're in their 80s or 90s or even more than 100. But the point is, there's no certainty, no definite age. Everyone reaches before they die. So that means we don't know ourselves how old we will be when death happens to us. Another factor for the uncertainty is that there's many different ways death can happen, causes of death. So it can happen due to illness. Many different kinds of illnesses can afflict a human body. And we're never sure whether or not we will get one of those illnesses. There are also accidents that can happen when one is traveling in a car or bus or train or airplane or boat. But even when one is walking down the street or crossing a street, it's possible to be hit by a vehicle and killed. Fear of accidents sometimes motivates people to stay home more. But even at home, there are things that could happen that can cause death. Sometimes people will get electrocuted, or there's a fire, or the building they're living in, the house they're living in, may collapse due to an earthquake. There are also cases of people who die in their sleep. They're not even sick. They have no apparent reason why they should die, but they simply go to bed, go to sleep, and then they don't wake up again. So even though we may feel as though our body body and our life are healthy and strong, and we may feel like we have so much energy and we're going to go on for a long, long time. But in fact, our life isn't as strong as it appears to be. It's actually quite fragile. Even something as tiny as a cell or a virus, if it gets into our body, could rob us of all of our strength and even our life. So the point of contemplating these points is not to get ourselves into a state of fear and panic. Instead, it's to have an awareness that life is precious, our time is limited, and if there are things we consider important to do in life, to not postpone them, but to make sure that we do them starting now. So just spend some time thinking about that. What are the things you consider important and valuable that you want to make sure that you at least begin doing while you still have time? Make some determination that you will at least start doing those things. So there's different ways one could use this meditation, the 9-point meditation. You could do all of the 9 points at once, just spending a short time on each one, just running through them quickly. Or you could take 1 point and really spend time on that 1 point, say, you know, one day you could meditate on 1 point, the next day another point, and so on. Because all of the 9 points are really important, really helpful to lead us to the ideal state of mind, where we feel, like I said, life is very precious, very fragile, and whatever we consider important to do in life, to make sure that we do those things and not waste our time. Okay, so we'll stop here for now and have a break for lunch. And then after lunch, 1:30, Wai Chong, yeah? We'll lead a short meditation from 1:30 to 2. And then I'll come back at 2 and we'll have another session from 2 until 4 to look at. This afternoon I'll focus more on what are the things we can do to prepare for death. What are different practices, different contemplations and so on to be more prepared for death when it happens. Thank you and have a nice nice break. See you later. Thank you.